We have two more great Easter readings today, the intervention of Gamaliel and then the multiplication of the loaves. But what caught my attention when I started looking at the liturgy is today's saint, Saint Catherine of Siena, or I think it's pronounced Shenna in the Philippines, like Shenna College. But anyway, Saint Catherine of Siena, as I said, she's a remarkable, one of the most remarkable women in the history of the church. Perhaps to talk about St. Catherine, I'll start by reflecting on how John's gospel works, because St. Catherine is something like John. She's a mystic who has deep insight into the practical things that happen. You know, John's gospel is structured differently from the other three synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. In Matthew, Mark, and Luke, typically there is a series of stories or accounts of Jesus healing someone or giving a teaching or performing a sign, or calming a storm, or telling a parable. And there's a whole rather rapid succession of remarkable passages. But in John's gospel, there are far fewer miracle stories, and far fewer parables. What he typically does is he takes one miracle or one event, and then after the miracle, he has Jesus giving a long teaching based on it, kind of a dialogue or a discourse. So we know, we just have read the chapter 3 of John, which is the passage in which Jesus is in this dialogue with Nicodemus, and before long, Nicodemus drops out of the picture and Jesus launches into a profound instruction. Today we start John chapter 6, so we skipped over John chapter 4, which centers especially on the experience of the Samaritan woman. And you know that passage, dialogue with the Samaritan woman, and then a discourse about the gift of God. And then John chapter 5 starts out with that passage of Jesus healing the man at the pool, one who had been sick for a long time. And that was a healing on the Sabbath. So that launched into a discussion of Sabbath healings and the authority of the Son of Man. And then we come to John chapter 6, which starts with this miraculous multiplication of bread, but then will extend into a very long discourse on the bread of life, some of the most profound passages about the Eucharist, Eucharistic chapter of John. So all of next week, we're going to be reflecting on the bread of life. Well, the reason why I think this is connected to St. Catherine is because Catherine reflected deeply on the events and was able to read them with profound mystical understanding, something like John's Gospel. Let me just read to you a little account of her life. This is from the Saint of the Day book. Catherine of Siena, she was born in 1347, middle of the 14th century, and then she died in 1380, so only 33 years old when she died. Does that sound familiar? 33 years old. Okay. I won't read the whole thing, but there's some beautiful details here. Catherine was the 23rd child of Jacopo and Lapa Benincasa. I don't know if they had any more after her, but maybe she was the bunso. But in other words, she didn't have to look for a religious community because she was born into a community. 23rd, so there's at least 25 in the family. I'd love to know more about her family life, but doesn't say anything about it here. She grew up as an intelligent, cheerful, and intensely religious person. Catherine disappointed her mother by cutting off her hair as a protest against being overly encouraged to improve her appearance in order to attract a husband. Her father ordered her to be left in peace, and she was given a room of her own for prayer and meditation. A room in the family home, I guess. She entered the Dominican Third Order at 18. and spent the next 3 years in seclusion, prayer, and austerity. Now, third order means she's still a laywoman. She's still living in the world. She didn't enter a convent. She's not a religious. She's a laywoman. But she's a third order. But she stayed at home and entered into this three-year period of withdrawal from the world, prayer. Gradually, a group of followers gathered around her, men and women, priests and religious. But she's only 18 years old, so between 18 and 21, she's already having a profound impact on people. You can see the impact of an authentic Christian life, an authentically dedicated Christian life. Catherine is one of the church's arguments against the complaint of the feminists, or the people who protest against the church. You know, the argument is, of the protesters, the church is oppressive to women, the church has an oppressive, hierarchical, patriarchal structure, and women can't rise up and take their rightful place. Well, here's a woman in the middle of the 14th century, which was much more hierarchical and much more oppressive than anything we know in our time. And she rises up with extraordinary influence over not only just the other lay men and women, but over priests, bishops, and even the Pope. We'll get to that in a minute here. So here she is after these 3 years, so she's about 21, an active public apostolate grew out of her contemplative life. This is where really effective public life comes from a deep inner life. Her letters, mostly for spiritual instruction and encouragement of her followers, began to take more and more note of public affairs. We're in the middle of an election period or a campaign period, and there's a lot of talk about public affairs. That is the work of lay people, to get involved in public life and bring the fruit of one's inner life, a life of faith, and apply it to the public life. Opposition and slander resulted from her mixing fearlessly with the world and speaking with the candor and authority of one completely committed to Christ. So she has slander and opposition. That's what happens to everybody who lives the gospel, and especially who lives the gospel in a public way. She was cleared of all charges at the Dominican General Chapter of 1374. So 1374, she's still, in her late 20s? Or 30, let's see, 47, 70. Yeah, she's 27 years old, and she's already been accused, slandered, opposed, and cleared of charges. Her public influence reached great heights because of her evident holiness, her membership in the Dominican Order, and the deep impression she made on the Pope. She worked tirelessly for the crusade against the Turks and for peace between Florence and the Pope. So religious issues, political issues, ecclesial issues. In 1378, so she's 31 years old, the Great Schism broke, splitting the allegiance of Christendom into two, then three popes, and putting even saints on opposite sides. You know this story. This is one of the worst moments in church history. There were three claimants to the papacy. There weren't three popes. There's only one pope. Two anti-popes. You think it's difficult nowadays. People are sometimes complaining about having two popes. We don't have two popes. We have Pope Benedict, who is retired. He's no longer the pope. And then we have Pope Francis. But, you know, people are always making controversy about who's the pope or whether we have a pope and all these things. Well, there's no doubt Francis is the pope. In the middle of the 14th century here, it wasn't that clear who was the right pope. It wasn't clear. St. Catherine, she did back the one who was really the pope. St. Vincent Ferrer is mentioned here in a little note. He was actually a supporter of one of the anti-popes, and he's a canonized saint. So you can see how difficult it was then. Three popes. Catherine spent the last 2 years of her life in Rome in prayer and pleading on behalf of the cause of Urban VI and the unity of the church. She offered herself as a victim for the church in its agony She died surrounded by her children, spiritual children. Catherine ranks high among the mystics and spiritual writers of the church. In 1970, Pope Paul VI named her a doctor of the church. She's the second woman after Teresa of Avila to bear that title, doctor of the church. Her spiritual testament is found in her writing known as the Dialogue, or sometimes the Dialogues. So Catherine of Siena, the reason I was, maybe why she came to my mind, my first thought was, yesterday was my anniversary, and so many people were greeting me for my anniversary, and I remembered my ordination, and I thought, my first Mass of Thanksgiving, what must have been on April 29th. It had to be, because I was ordained on April 28th. So my first Mass of Thanksgiving, April 29th, I said, must have been the Feast of St. Catherine. And then I remembered I was ordained on a Saturday. So April 29th of that year, 2001, was a Sunday. So we didn't honor St. Catherine. But that's what first brought her to mind. And then as I read her life, and I thought, my goodness, this woman who lived at a time which seems so strange to us and so different from modern times has a great lesson for us to take deeply the mystery of Christ, to dedicate ourselves deeply to the Word of God, and to do what God says in the world. Okay, so that's behind the reflections on this discourse, John chapter 6. We know this story. There's a huge crowd of people. It's a public affair. And Jesus asks the question when he sees the large crowd, where can we buy enough food for them to eat? Sounds like a very practical question. Logistics, supply chain, shortages, inflation, food supply. Okay. Where can we buy enough food for them to eat? He asks Philip. And then it says here, he said this to test him. Is Philip going to talk about supply chain and food shortages and economic issues? Or is he going to apply what he knows from inside? Is he going to apply the inner life to the practical circumstances of the day? Well, Philip fails the test. He says, we need 200. Well, even if we had 200 days' wages, he starts calculating 200 days' wages. That would get us this much bread, and there's this many people. And, they wouldn't even get it's not enough. Nope, can't do it, sorry. Practical solution. Practical lack of a solution. He didn't draw on the depths of his inner life. He hadn't been formed yet deeply in the inner life, Philip. Andrew comes along with the young boy. You don't know the boy's name, but the boy has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. Andrew at least says, this is what we've got. Better than Philip, who says we don't have enough. Andrew says, this is what we've got. But then he says, what good are these for so many? He slips back into the natural human practical observation. What good are these? The boy is the only one who doesn't fall into that calculating human way. He, maybe because he's young, maybe because he's impressed with Jesus, maybe because he's just a good kid, generous and not concerned about himself, he doesn't ask the question, what good are these? He says, this is what I have. This is what I have. And that's what people of faith are supposed to do. This is what I have. Whether it's good enough or not is up to God, not up to me. Catherine, she didn't have anything, but what she had, she gave, and it turned out to have extraordinary impact on people. Well, we know there was the miracle, but behind the scenes of the many loaves of bread was this young boy who has submitted himself and everything he has to the power of Jesus Christ. That's the enduring lesson. Offer whatever you have to Jesus Christ. Little or much is not the issue. Give it all. The world will oppose that way of life. It will always come up with some some wrong interpretation of what we're up to and put us on trial. Look what happens to the apostles again. The apostles are on trial in the Sanhedrin. The authorities want to kill them. Only Gamaliel has enough common sense to say, wait a minute, we don't know what God is up to here. Back off. Gamaliel isn't making a brilliant mystical discourse here. He's actually just applying common sense. We don't know what God is doing. Back off and let's wait until it's clear. Don't have anything to do with them if you don't know. Wait. So, and then we know what happens. The apostles, who are just a few loaves of bread themselves, have extraordinary impact on the world. So we have the young boy, we have the apostles, we have Catherine of Siena, and we have ourselves. We're all in the same church. We're all on the same path, called to dedicate ourselves and all we have to Jesus Christ, and then we let God worry about the rest. Amen.